Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. The most popular news website in Malaysia is an enigma, an online newspaper that's thriving in a country where freedom of the press has always been suffocated. Malaysia Kini, or Malaysia Now, operates out of shabby offices in Kuala Lumpur, the capital, with 24 reporters and a shoestring budget. Malaysia Kini is considered to be the only independent media outlet with independent financing in all of Malaysia. The online newspaper is also an example of how the internet can dramatically change the political power structure in an authoritarian regime. Our guest today is Stephen Gan, the co-founder and editor of Malaysia Kini. He'll tell us how they've managed to challenge the authorities for 13 years now, in a country that's been ruled by the same political party since winning its independence from Britain 55 years ago. Welcome, Stephen.
Hi, David.
So, Malaysia is a multi-religious, multi-ethnic country with a large number of private newspapers, radio stations, and TV stations. How does the government rein them in?
Well, through two different ways. One is through the repressive laws. The last time I checked, we have 35 laws which directly or indirectly impinge on press freedom. So that's one. And the other one is through ownership by the fact that you have political parties, the ruling parties, directly owning the, or through proxies, the newspapers, TV station, and radio station. That's how they do it.
And Malaysia Kini has overcome a government raid of its offices, threats, and numerous cyber attacks. How have you managed to maintain your independence?
Well, with great difficulty. I think, it's been 13 years. I think we've been through the worst of the times. I think especially in the beginning when you've got, the strongman, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad as Prime Minister. Has been in power for about 22 years. And definitely, the type of person, leader who not broke any dissent. He has arrested a lot of dissidents over the years under the draconian Internal Security Act, which allows the government to detain any dissident without trial indefinitely. So I think they're in great difficulty. But things have changed. I mean, after so many years of campaigning and the fact that we existed as an independent media. Malaysian people have responded and have demand for reform.
I understand that that the government is keen on bringing in technology companies into Malaysia and their internet technology companies, and therefore is not restricting the internet in the country. And that is one of the reasons why you're able to operate independently. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I think all credit goes to Mahathir, the former prime minister. I think, definitely there are a lot of, I have a lot of issues with him. I disagree with a lot of his policy, but there's one policy that I agree, I supported him, and that is the fact that he promised not to censor the internet. And what he did was that he's one of, he's a visionary in some sense. In one of his, he wanted, Kuala Lumpur. He wanted Malaysia to be the Silicon Valley of Asia, he set up this an area called the Multimedia Super Corridor, And within that area, basically, you know, he wanted IT company from Seattle and from Tokyo and elsewhere to come and invest, and to entice them to come. He has, of course, promised tax breaks and all that. But in addition to that, he has promised not to censor the internet. And that is crucial because, you know, they're in a country where the media, the traditional media, is tightly controlled. For him to promise that he's not going to touch the internet is unusual. And that's how Malaysia King came about. It's basically we are exploiting that loophole.
Right.
We do not need to apply here.
I think one of the biggest examples of your success was in 2008 when the opposition parties won a significant number of seats in Parliament for the first time in history and nearly won the popular vote. Now, what happened and what was Malaysia King's role?
I think that was, you know, 2008 was the tipping point to some extent. Malaysia King was set up in 1999 and there was, you know, a long period of years of campaigning, and finally, I think 2008 was the year where, you know, you see, you know, a change of mindset among a lot of Malaysians who have been under the environment of fear, and suddenly, you know, the silent majority decided to speak out. So it was a time when, you know, you see the opposition making gains, but not enough to win power. We will have to wait for the next election or even the coming one.
Now, in 2008, the journalists, commentators, and politicians credited the internet for the surprising results. The prime minister at the time said, quote, "We certainly lost the internet war, the cyber war. It was a serious misjudgment. We made the biggest mistake in thinking that it was not important." Now, have they learned that from that mistake? Will the dynamics be different later in the coming months when the new elections take place?
Yes, I think definitely you see the ruling coalition, the government, the politicians and all that embracing the internet. You see them taking to Twittering, to Facebooking and all that. So there is definitely a conscious attempt to at least not to concede grounds in cyberspace, because that has been very much used by the opposition. Because they have no access to the traditional media, they use the internet, and they have used it quite successfully for 2008. So I think, you know, for this coming election, you see, you know, both sides battling it out in cyberspace.
Do you expect there to be cyber attacks against Malaysia King? And how have the past cyber attacks affected you guys?
Yes, I mean, you know, apart from, you know, the in-your-face kind of harassment over the years, the raid of our office by the police, taking away of our computers and all that, increasingly you see sort of the underhanded attack against Malaysia King. And that is the DOS attack, the denial of service attack, which, you know, there's no way that we can pinpoint where it's coming from. You cannot blame the government. There's no proof of that. But we can see that, you know, basically, yes, you know, every time there's a major event, a major demonstration and all that, you see the cyber attack coming in. I'm pretty sure that when the election campaign begins in earnest, you will see another cyber attack against Malaysia King, trying to shut us down. We have to find ways to overcome it.
How does it work? What do they do, the hackers?
Well, basically, you know, the denial of service attack, the DDoS attack, is hackers hijacking, you know, computers from all around the world, mostly China, Brazil, Russia, and so on, and they would send traffic to Malaysia King to the website. And it was this tremendous, you know, amount of traffic coming in, trying to access websites. And these are, you know, they are not genuine traffic. to the point where, you know, the Malaysia Kini readers are unable to access the website. So that's how they do it. They're basically blocking out all genuine traffic coming to the website.
And without getting into specifics, I know that you're the co-founder is a tech-savvy guy. Do you have a plan for getting around the next cyber attack?
Yes, we do have a plan, and I think we have more or less successfully mitigated that in the last time. The last attack was 2 months ago, and I think we'll be definitely implementing that again. And there are also other ways. I cannot review that here, but definitely yes, we do have a set of plans.
Now let's circle back to the beginning, and let our listeners and viewers understand the how Malaysia Kini got its start. I understand that the idea kind of gelled in a coffee shop conversation.
Yes, the co-founders of Malaysia Kini, myself and Premesh Chandran, we were both student activists. We met when we were studying in Australia. I was doing architecture while he was doing physics, so nothing to do with journalism whatsoever. But we got politicized in the sense that we were definitely very much involved in human rights issues when we were studying there, and exposed to the students' movement in Asia at that time in the 80s. You've got students in Philippines trying to topple the Marcos dictatorship. And of course, you know, students in Indonesia trying to oust the Suharto dictatorship. And also as well, Tiananmen in China, you know, and all that. Right. So, and also in Burma. So it was a time when, you know, the students were very active all around Asia. And we in Australia were, you know, trying to support them by raising money and getting in contact with them. So through that, we got politicized. And when we returned to Malaysia, eventually, somehow, for some reason, though we were not in contact with each other, we ended up in the same profession as journalists and in the same newspaper, too. So that's how it all started.
And you were, I understand you became disillusioned with the newspaper in Malaysia where you were both working?
Yes, that's right. Definitely we were, you know, very, very idealistic, you know, that we want to play a role in bringing about change. We worked for this mainstream newspaper. And of course, you know, it was very difficult. We can see our stories, our reports being changed all the time. I have a column, and sometimes, you know, the censorship was so much, and this is self-censorship. It's censorship being done by the newspaper itself, newspaper editors. And, you know, sometimes my weekly columns been changed to the point where I cannot even recognize my own writing.
Right.
And I told the editor and said, look, you know, if you're going to change so much, take out my byline because that's not acceptable. So eventually we left, yes. I went to Thailand and worked for a newspaper there. We decided to come back together later to set up Malaysia Kini.
And how did you manage to get the money together to start an online newspaper?
Well, we have money from our own pocket, and we also have some help from a regional journalist organization, which was based in Bangkok, and the fact that I was there at that time helped. We managed to get, you know, some capital from them. They raised money to help support Malaysia Kini in the beginning. And that was our seed money. And through that, we were able to launch Malaysia Kini. But eventually, of course, we would need to find ways to support Malaysia Kini. And we have to look at other sources of income as well.
Right. I understand. Now, you decided in 2002 to put up a paywall, and that's at a time when there weren't very many news sites that would do that. What was behind that decision, and how has the, like, how many people now read Malaysia Kini, and how many are paid subscribers?
Well, when we first started, when we first went live, at that time, you know, there was really, you know, there are no talk about setting up a paywall. I mean, you know, we were relying on advertising, and at that time, you know, the understanding was that website should be able to survive through advertising. And in the first 1 or 2 years, really, it wasn't a problem. Advertising did come in. We were already the biggest website in Malaysia, and it was the first internet, the first .com boom, where you see, you know, a lot of venture capital being pumped into startups, and there were a lot of them in Malaysia, and they're all advertising in Malaysia Kini, so, you know, in order to get their eyeballs. So we have no problems. And then, of course, 2000, 2001, there was a dot-com crash, and all these startups disappeared, and we also lost our advertising clients. And so we knew that we would join them as well if we did not do anything drastic. And that was basically the last resort, setting up the paywall. It was something that we hate to do, but we decided that we really have no choice.
And so how many people now read Malaysia Kini, and how many are...
The moment we sell out the paywall, and we were in 2003, 2002, we were already, drawing in about 300,000 unique visitors a day. We immediately, when we pull out the paywall, we see it dropping to about 5,000 to 10,000. So it was... how painful to see it, to see our readership all, losing that huge number of readership. We decided to say, okay, fair enough. We'll just try to, soldier on, persevere. And slowly over the years, we see them coming back, and now we are back to about 300,000.
That's quite a few. So what percentage of your budget comes from paid subscriptions, and what percentage comes from advertising and other sources?
Initially, it was about 90% subscription and 10% advertising, because we're not getting any, online advertising in the early years was almost amount to nothing, in a sense. Without the internet startups and all that, you don't, a lot of brick and mortar companies are not warm up to, advertising online yet. Increasingly, you see them coming, online, but they're still not in a big number as compared to United States or UK. At this point, their online advertising is still about, 2 or 3% of the whole advertising, their budget. So it's still pretty small. Because the fact that we are the biggest website in Malaysia, we're getting a fair amount of that small pot of money, that advertising money. So okay. Increasingly, you see about 50% of our income now that depends on advertising, and another 50% subscription.
Okay. Now, before we continue our discussion, Stephen, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. So please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at GJJournalist. So I wanted to, Stephen, talk about your country. Tell us... you described it as a multi-ethnic, multi-racial, and multi-religious country, and your newspaper is published in three languages. Tell us a bit about your diversity of Malaysia.
Well, I think Malaysia is quite, you know, unique in some ways. It's quite complex also. It is made up of about, you know, 60% of the population are ethnic Malays, and then you've got another 20 to 24% of ethnic Chinese, as well as 7%, you know, of ethnic Indians. So it makes these are the three major ethnic groups, and there are still, you know, there are also a lot of other minor ethnic groups as well. So it is multiracial in that sense, multi-ethnic. But it is also multilingual in a sense that, you know, there are about, you know, three major languages being spoken by the different groups: Malay, Chinese, as well as Tamil. So, you know, and English as well, to throw in the mix. Because of the fact that we were former colony of the British, yeah. so that you know makes it a lot more difficult for a media organization to exist to operate.
And how does Malaysia Kini deal with sensitive issues like religious conflict, and how does that compare with the state and control? Private media that's controlled by the government.
I think it is quite clear. I mean, you know, the fact that you know we have a lot of readers coming to Malaysia Kini is basically the fact that, you know, that they are not getting the news that they should be getting from the mainstream media. News of corruption, you know, grand corruption, news of abuse of power, news of, you know, deaths in custody, detention without trial, you know, all that, police abuse, independence of judiciary, you know, all that. So you don't see that much being covered by the mainstream media, and we do a lot of that. In fact, Malaysia Kini is a political website. We do not cover anything else. We don't do sport. We don't do lifestyle. We don't do, you know, the business. It's basically political, and that's where, you know, our niche is.
How do you avoid the tough laws against defamation? I know that they've cracked down on some bloggers, and there's some a lot of self censorship because of the concern about defamation.
Well, Malaysia Kini believes in good journalism, and I think that is the, you know, the best way to protect yourself. To make sure that, you know, whatever stories that you pull up, it's been double checked, you know, that you know it can stand on its own. That if there is a court case, you know, that we would have enough witnesses to be able to back up, you know, what we have written. So basically, that was it, really. Just to make sure that, you know, that every story that we publish has been double checked, and you know, of course, there is no guarantee that they would not still take action against you. But I think, you know, that is a risk that we would have to take.
Now, you also have one of your recent initiatives has been to engage kind of a small army of citizen journalists, but they're trained. Can you tell us about how that works?
Yes, we find that, you know, there are a lot of Malaysians out there, a lot of people out there who wanted to report on, you know, what is happening, you know, around them, and you know they want to do their bit. So I think, you know, the problem is that they do not have the skill. They may have the intention, you know, they may have the passion for it, but they do not have the perhaps, you know, the skill to be able to do it. And they also, more importantly, they do not have the professional ethics. I mean, you know, basically, you know, they are making sure that they're being fair to the subjects that you are reporting on. To make sure that you double check your facts, to make sure that, you know, you talk to as many people as possible, to get a, you know, a more rounded kind of, you know, more closely to the truth and all that. So that is what we do. We decided that, look, you know, we'll advertise, we'll get them to come to Malaysia Kini on the weekends, because a lot of them are professionals, some of them are students, some of them mm-hmm. are homemakers, some of them are retirees and all that. So we get them to come, and we would, train them over the weekends. And that's what we do. Eventually, we have now, about 200 citizen journalists that are trained by Malaysia TV, and they are, they're pretty good, and they are helping to report on what is happening out there.
What's an example of a big story that was broken by a citizen journalist?
Well, it's basically, the very basic thing. It's, the fact that Malaysia Kini is still relatively very small. We're still very much based in Kuala Lumpur, which is the capital city. We do not have a lot of correspondents in other parts of the country. And these citizen journalists, they come from everywhere, and they are based in their own hometowns, and, even in the, some of them are actually natives in the jungle. So I think, the fact that they were there itself, they are breaking news. Like, say, for instance, a demonstration by a group of natives, in order to protect the land from encroachment by the loggers itself is already, news. We couldn't be there. Because, we cannot access the area. We do not have anybody there. But these guys are there. And so they were able to report it.
That's interesting. Now, what's next for Malaysia Kini's visitors? Are there new initiatives being planned?
Well, I think, increasingly, definitely we are going mobile. I think, that's been happening for the past 1 or 2 years. But increasingly, I could see that, the internet TV will be a big thing. So you will have a situation where, a person will use a computer when it's in office to access the internet. And when it's out there on the ground and all that, they use the mobile phone to access the internet. And then when they get home, they would access the internet through big screen TV. So increasingly, we'll have to, that will be an interesting platform for us to get into, and we are looking into that.
Now, you also have a thriving letter section and reader engagement, but you have allow them to be anonymous. Has that caused any problems, and how do you regulate that?
When we first started the letters, the email section, where people send us email, we publish them. Of course, we back through them and all that. It was interesting because, I always believe that the media should provide a platform for people to come and discuss issues, burning issues. Issues that are of great import to them.
Stephen, I have to break in. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist. It's produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Stephen Gann, thank you so much for joining us to tell us the incredible story behind Malaysia Kini, a small news operation that's having a big impact in your country. Our program is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. David Cawthon was our lead producer. And join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.